righty.
Podcast sign.
Hello. We got a podcast sign. Yeah. I'm your not so special host, Sully, and here I am with the other MVPs returning for another Mystery Science Theater themed discussion. We're discussing the top 10 Mike Nelson Comedy Central era episodes. And returning to the show, we got Ryan. Welcome. We got Teresa. Welcome.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. We got Thomas Aquinas Keith.
Hello.
And Mike Insing.
Hello.
He's not an Insing. He's an Insing. He might be in sync, though. But
no, it's got... Mike can sing.
Oh. And we got Gil.
Howdy.
Howdy. Partner in crime. And then we got Will Steyer, also known as the geek with the clip-ons.
Hello.
Hello.
Come on down to Minnesota, meet some comedy pals of ours. So yeah, it's just kind of before we kind of get into, wait, it wasn't easy to assemble this list because we just had so many.
Yeah,
like that's yeah, funny. Or, oh, it's funny, but I can't watch it again. It's so the movie was painful, what? or the host segments weren't the best. You know, so it was funny with this one. You know, because you know Joel had so many monster movies, and you know Sandy Frank and Mike in this case is kind of getting into more just obscure grindhouse and slashers and sword and sorcery type movies.
Yeah,
and he has 3 years before they do the movie, and then they do Sci-Fi Channel era, but some of them we kept mistaking. It's like, wait, oh shoot, that's a Sci-Fi Channel one. We can't put it on the list yet.
Right.
How many of us was this your first era you saw versus, you know, the second era?
My first one was Warrior of the Wasteland.
Oh, okay.
And I think that's Mike, isn't it? Yeah.
I think.
Oh, The Lost Joel. World. Oh, that's Joel. But fair enough. You're coming in near the end before he departs.
I think my first full episode I saw was with some friends, and it was a DVD copy of EGA. And that was like season 5, just when Joel was still hosting. Like this was like halfway through. That was almost halfway through.
Gotcha. So you were already kind of ready for the
almost
unpredictable.
Yeah, episode or two before he left.
Gotcha.
Yeah, he went through half of season 5. And
yeah. Then,
right.
Escape from the Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah.
Definitely. I started watching right on the turnover into season 6. So like it was some mix of Joel and Mike episodes over the summer, and then
they
like,
played them out of order.
The family emergency. Can I tape them while I go to Colorado on a family trip when season 6 premiered?
Oh wow,
nice!
So you're looking forward to looking at the tape when you get back. Yes, yeah. Guys. For those before we had TiVo and Spectrum, we actually set our VCRs to record.
they didn't. All right, care. You could do that. They didn't carry Comedy Central in Des Moines.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I found out about
Mystery
Science Theater on a road trip, and I was at a hotel, and I turned this on. I said, "What the hell is this?"
Yeah,
and
typical reaction. Yeah,
I'm really liking this.
Right, not sure how I should be feeling right now, but I can't turn away.
So I found out my brother-in-law at the time, he lived in a place where they had Comedy Central. I said, well, would you be able to record some tapes for me? And yeah, he was able to do that. That's how I
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, for me, I, at the, oh, was he, our, were you finished off?
Oh, I'm done.
Okay, cool. So with me, I was about 15, maybe a little bit younger, maybe a little bit older, but I saw a commercial. Because at that time, the channel that was Comedy Central was only Comedy Central after midnight.
Right. Home box
office. So
yeah.
It was just all a mess. And I caught it at some weird ass time. And it just, I don't even remember what the first one was. And I with me and TV, I don't watch things in order a lot. I have trouble scheduling that thing. I always have. So I kind of lost contact with it for a minute, and then I came in and it was Mike instead of Joel, and I was like, oh, a new guy. And then that was pretty much how I started.
Nice.
And yeah, it was on a 12:30, I think, the same time as Letterman was back. I kicked in halfway through X Marks the Spot short, which is a great place to start, you know.
Nice.
And then King Dinosaur. Go. And then the first cool one I watched was First Spaceship on Venus, I think. But I was Letterman all the time, and I was switching channels during commercials and all of a sudden, but the first impression I got was, this is really dumb. What's
going on? Why are they talking over a movie?
Something connected. I'm going, I'm really interested. What is going on? So I went back, and I think it took about 5 minutes at X Marks the Spot short. I get it, you know.
Yeah.
And then Crow does his little dissertation after the short, and I said, I've not seen this before, and I still haven't. You know, there's still nothing like the show. So
no, absolutely not. How about you, Thomas?
Oh gosh. I actually, I'm probably a young teenager, caught a date with your family.
Oh yeah.
My family is a friend.
Oh yeah.
Everyone is friendly.
Sister seeks the dog. Didn't quite know what to make of it at first. Gave it about 2 or 3 minutes. Almost passed out from laughing and said, okay, this is the best thing I've ever seen. I need to find more.
Very nice. Very nice.
There you go.
And it's interesting with this era, because this is when the fan base is really taking off, you know, sending in more fan art and doing conventions later on. And in a way, it's just like many other post-90s, cult movies and shows where they kind of made their own business empire. Yeah, entertainment company. And it's interesting here how,
they just carved out that niche. They went...
Absolutely. And here they're trying, you know, Mike isn't doing the, you know, I do miss the invention exchange. It's just not the same, but I do like how they're kind of just getting weirder and more kookier.
Yeah, they did it for a couple episodes. Then Mike was like, I'm not a prop comic.
Yeah.
That really was.
I rewatched Alien from LA, and there's one in that. That must be an early one, because they do one in that one.
I think so. Like, it was like episode one.
That's season five, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
That's a season five episode. That's still early. So yeah, like season five, they did a couple of vintage exchanges with Mike.
Right. Yeah. And it only makes sense from a comedy or acting standpoint. We're just like, I'm going to be me. You know, I'm not going to be, if I'm not good at being someone else,
he's a better character.
I'll never evolve. Yeah.
they stopped doing the invention exchange with Outlaw of Gore. 519.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Nice. We'll talk about that.
Good
one.
Catch. Yeah.
We'll talk about that later.
Totally. So,
I want to try Cabot as a drinking game.
And all the phallic statues.
Probably wouldn't last a half hour.
Oh man!
Right.
You know what? Let's go ahead in no particular order. Let's get into Outlaw, also known as Outlaw Gore. So this was, written by a misogynist writer. It was filmed in like Bulgaria or South Africa, and you don't need to see the first one because it really doesn't make any sense. It's basically another Lord of the Rings type, you know, sword and sandals, you know, with wizards and shit and Jack Palance.
It's basically a fetish novel.
It's a fetish novel, yeah.
And series, really. Yeah.
It's so wild how the main gal in this, she went on to become a B movie actress and I think Playmate, and the other unlikable lead is often the main mocking point, where they're just like, kill him, kill him.
Watney Smith.
That was the problem with many low budget. That's the problem with a lot of low budget fantasy movies, is like the lead is either bland as hell or a giant asshole.
Right.
Yeah.
And they can't get in between.
You keep waiting for him to be like, you keep waiting for him to be like,
he just got like,
you keep waiting for him to be like Warrior of the Lost World, where he just leaves his daughter to be killed, and you're like, what's going on here? Is this written by an alien who doesn't know about empathy? Or
I don't know how to do anti-heroes is the problem.
Yeah, they really don't. And
like one of the quote teenagers from outer space, the nice one, yeah.
It does make me wish at times that they could have reused the Mitchell quote, the hero of the movie, everyone. You know?
Star of the movie. Ladies and
I thought the most memorable character in the whole movie was Queen Laura, and she might actually be the strongest female character in any of these Mystery Science Theater movies.
Yeah, because she's not sexualized or anything.
She's not sexualized. She's brazen.
I mean, she's cute, but we mean she's not just the, you know, mindless.
Another side effect of exploitation movies is, yeah, the women characters often just get sexualized and or fridged.
And hiring her filmmakers. Line,
you disgusting worm is so memorable.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say she does the stinger. That might be my favorite stinger ever. It's just
the breastica boobicle.
You disgusting worm, you know, at the end.
It almost
jumps out of the screen at you, you know.
Oh, totally. And whenever see a video game that's like fantasy or an RPG nowadays, you do wonder how many of those gamers probably grew up watching movies like these and wanted to do a stylish take on it, but better.
I think you almost mentioned it, Ryan, but there was a song.
Yep, Breastica Boobicle. That's one of the best songs.
Tubular Boobular Joy.
That did remind me of the Tubular Boobular Joy song. Oh my god,
It's great. I mean it's one of those things that you hum along with and might get stuck in your head a little bit for a while.
Totally.
It firmly established that Mike is the musical theater guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not Gizmocrat musical theater.
Right.
He did songs behind the scenes too, right? Before he was hosting,
I think so. He's got a ton of
song credits I've seen. Yeah.
If you read
like the Gamera is super neat song and piano,
it's why he appears as Gamera in the script. But it's just interesting how you read some of his books, and he talks about how he would often get picked on or heard in like a stupid play, and he basically wanted to be just the idiot who stood out. Fill with dignity, kind of in a way. Once again, no order. We also had Village of the Giants picked, which is one of Ron Howard's earlier acting credits.
And the most notable thing for that at the beginning of the movie, it's the song, it's the music that they used in Death Proof, I think it was.
That movie.
Bridges is so smart. Oh, I just want to. Every time he's on screen, I want to slap him. He's just between that and Cabot's buddy. They're like tied for the most.
I wanted to smack him. That's for sure. The guy from
Cabot's buddy. Can't believe this is a real person that was written on screen.
it's got Tommy Kirk from like Disney fame.
Yeah.
Yep.
Also, apparently, Disney. Caper, another MST episode, but like. The older son in Old Yeller.
And there's that redheaded lady that like within the last like 5 to 10 years she did a song. I wish I could remember what it was, but she did the dancing and they made a joke about
Tony Basil.
She's in it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know she was in that. Cool.
And Joe Turkle.
Yeah.
I'm looking up IMDb now of like the cast for that. Like
there are times where you will see them watch these movies and you kind of wish they'd kind of note some of the famous people who were in it, but I think if they tried to, they just had to cut it for time. It's like we just can't focus. They might not have recognized them. They are bit parts.
If it was a small role. Just watching these movies, how like so many certain actors are in other B movies. I'm like, I've seen too many of these.
Right.
When you start recognizing certain actors in other movies, you're just like, oh my god, that guy.
Yeah. And then there's another Mike CC movie that was Revenge of the Creature, which stars, well, not doesn't star, has a bit part, Clint Eastwood.
Yeah. I would have put that movie on the list, except we weren't allowed to do sci-fi.
We'll divide it up.
That's right. That was at the beginning of sci-fi.
Yeah.
What do they say? This guy's terrible. This will be his last movie or something like that. Yeah.
They had to get something from the Universal Classic Monster Vault. We also had Angel's Revenge on here, and that's once again them having to face off with Raiden Clark's very dark.
Oh Lord. I was so hoping I could find an uncut version of that, only to find out it was a TV movie.
Somehow they were allowed to air it late at night on TV. You just can't believe it.
Well, I don't think, is there any nudity in it? I don't think there's nudity.
No, there is not much.
It's the kind of movie you think would go for exploitation with nudity and stuff, because they're definitely really sexualizing the women in the movie.
It's like so Charlie's like, Angels, but with bikers.
You kind of wish it went kind of more exploitation because otherwise it's so just, it's mostly just stupid.
But no, it was all about power. Shine.
Well, yeah.
And once just again, the second power. Movie out here that has Jack Palance.
It also also the main woman of the movie is Graydon Clark's wife.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
The teacher.
Yeah, his wife.
April, the teacher, was married to Graydon Clark. She was also in Star Games, the Graydon Clark one.
With Graydon Clark and their two sons. It starred their two sons and Tony Curtis.
Stardate, man.
Tony Curtis as a alien king with a Brooklyn accent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Graydon Clark has some kind of weird hypno power where he can get actors who are way too good for his movies into his movies.
It really doesn't make sense.
Yeah, because you see some of those other guys who make sleazy movies and you're like, they must be a real piece of work. And he's like, it's pretty calm and laid back, surprisingly. Yeah, he does conventions.
Mr. Howell shows up in that one too, doesn't he?
Yeah. And Alan Hale Jr.
Darby.
Really? So you got two of the castaways. I didn't.
Oh, yeah. They're in different scenes together. But yeah, like Alan Hale in the beginning with the lounge singer.
Oh, that's right.
He just basically tells her how great she is.
Yes.
And Jim Back is the leader of a military, like a
militia.
He's in uniform. He's in uniform, yeah.
Were they neo-Nazis or just some kind of like...
They were trying to get ammo from him.
Yeah.
Yeah, what kind of compound was that? It looked like a hillbilly hangout.
Right.
They were making drugs or something. Also, just the framing device of starting off with the action. Like, how did we get in this situation? Like, this didn't feel necessary for the plot.
That was originally planned from what I've heard. Originally, it was supposed to go in chronological order, and it kind of bombed. So they said, okay, well, we
got it. Godfrey was beyond washed up at that point in his career, because... Yeah, didn't he? Like, no one's heard of him by then, you know. But.
And like,
probably had a.
I think
stuck up for Peter.
I think Peter Lawford sat the whole time because he was drunk.
Oh, they joke about that.
That'll do it. Not for actors.
Like, I don't think he stood up the whole movie, or at least not much.
No.
Right.
One of the scenes of Angel's Revenge that sticks out for me is where they're buying the van, and he offers them a price. With 88 cents on the end.
Yeah, the guy from Green Acres.
They talk him down to 88 cents. And I'm like, what? What's the point?
I think Graydon Clark thought it was funny. If I had to guess, Graydon Clark thought it was funny.
Yeah, probably.
Because his sense of humor is not great.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
That's the thing. Like, a lot of his movies definitely seem to have moments that are supposed to be funny on purpose, but fail to be funny.
Like Star Games.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Star Games, I'm pretty sure moments in what's it called? Uninvited are supposed to be like funny, but they're not actually funny. It's the more absurd moments like with the cat that are funny.
Yeah, man.
Because I mean, I don't know how he could have ever thought that was gonna be legitimately scary.
Yeah. Angel's Revenge is basically exploitation light.
It's more lighthearted.
It's USA Network,
none of the women are getting like beat around a lot like you would in these movies. Like they get in danger, but they're not like being assaulted.
Heroes.
Like the worst that happens to them is at the end with the main girl being like put into a pool with a weight at the end, like she's being like they're threatening to drown her essentially.
Yeah.
Which is bad, but like compared to other exploitation movies, that's fairly light.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Kind of standard James Bond kind of parallel.
Like the bar,
and the villains
bar for,
love
the bar
to laugh
for, in exploitation
for the sake
movies
of laughing.
Yeah.
While we're talking about Angel's Revenge, I'd like to mention, like, I looked up all the women, and Kieyu Chin, who played Kakaumaru, the Japanese character, is the only one of them who's still working.
Oh, really?
And She went on to play Suwon Woo, the mother in Joy Luck Club, who's like the whole reason for the whole story.
Wow.
Someone who actually had a career.
Wow. I thought her character was Vietnamese, but she was doing like katana stuff.
Is the character actually Vietnamese? Because the actress is Vietnamese.
Okay, but the name
Kakaumaru doesn't look like a Vietnamese.
No, that's the thing. I think the character's name is Japanese. But I'm pretty sure they say in the narration she's Vietnamese. But yeah, she's got like a katana and teaching a karate class, which was the confusing aspect of that character.
We're kind of tone deaf.
That's the thing about, that's the thing also about exploitation movies. When they have a character who's Asian, they basically just use all of the Asians, like, culture in their backstory.
It always bothered me. She didn't have enough lines. I wanted to hear her have more lines, and she just waves the katana around. And
like, I'm pretty sure they were vague about, like, Oddjob in Goldfinger was like, his background was fairly vague on his martial arts technique, which was just being big and hard to knock over.
Yeah.
But today she's still in stuff. She was in an episode of The Neighborhood and NCIS LA and ER.
Good for her.
Oh, good for you. She
got a lifetime achievement at San Diego Asian Film Fest.
That's very cool. Well, good for her. She survived Great Enclosure.
The real hero of the movie, everyone.
if your career survives Great and Clark, that's something.
Yeah.
Right.
Riff Tracks did that with Mary Jo Pill and Bridget Nelson. Too.
I think
it's a little more of an extended cut.
Yeah.
I'd have to look at it again. I think there's a couple extra
scenes. Because they don't have to worry about commercials and stuff. They'd have to, there's nothing like too bad in there they'd have to cut out for censoring. It was just anything they cut out would usually be for like commercials and
for time.
Scenes that were just not as like, trim like the more like meandering scenes that these movies often have.
Mm-hmm. There's actually a whole plot line they cut out in the Mystery Science Theater version with Neville Brand, who was a big star in the 40s. The cop's boss.
I remember him from Laredo, yeah.
Yeah.
Reese Bennett, yeah.
Yeah, Bridget and Mary Jo's version is also very fun.
I'll have to check out that version. Those two have
really great chemistry.
Yeah. Okay, so the next one we got here is Laser Blast. This is a popular one being by Charles Band's Empire Pictures.
Decent the last one
for
comedy
movie. Yeah, and they kept joking. Leonard Maltin, he gave us a passable review.
they riffed my hometown in that one. Are you ready to rock Grand Rapids? So I'm sitting in Grand Rapids Township right now. So that was like, what? Really?
It's all good.
Eddie Deason playing a bully.
All fun and games. But
that might have been his first movie. That might have been Eddie Deason's first movie was Laser Blast.
Before he became a very big voice actor on Nickelodeon.
He voiced
and Dark. He's such a perv, and you're just like, this character, I don't know why I should root for him.
he's playing a bully when normally he plays the nerdy character in a movie, like best nerd character.
He's a nerdy bully though, that's for sure.
Yep.
The other bully bullies him too.
Yeah, you got like the main guy who looks kind of like Mark Hamill crossed with Steve Buscemi crossed with kind of a little bit of Michael Shannon in there.
Years before any of those guys were really
He and Mark Hamill, Kim Milford and Mark Hamill were in a movie together, Corvette Summer.
That's okay. Right. Didn't they reuse some of Annie the same Cox. Cars?
But yeah. He kind of looks, but like he's kind of looking and sounding like Mark Hamill in Laser Blast, like the way he's doing his voice, like he's kind of doing he's kind of sounding like Luke Skywalker in scenes with the way he talks.
Well, they blew up a Star Wars sign in that movie, too.
Yes, they did.
Out of nowhere, there's a billboard.
This movie's going to blow Star Wars away. Oh, my God. And they got
Ego, baby. Ego.
Keenan Wynn in there as a senile grandpa.
And Roddy McDowell, who seems like...
Marty McDowell. Oh, my God.
Boy, God, Roddy McDowell. So many movies are just like, what are you doing here?
He was pretty much about how much effort does it require and will I be good in it, you know?
I mean, shit.
Or how much money does it pay?
I can't imagine this movie paid much.
I think McDowell really liked to work, to be honest. He was just one of those actors that really enjoyed working. So.
He really does.
If he had fun making the movie, great. I mean, a lot of these movies you hear behind the scenes stories where a lot of the actors did seem to have fun making them, at least. Mm-hmm.
Well, the hip guy... I forgot what movie are we talking about now?
Laser Blast.
Okay, never mind.
There's a hippie guy in there.
And like the heavyset cop in that movie was a character actor in a ton of things.
Oh yeah. Probably always playing a cop
or a biker or something.
Yeah.
Somebody there was a weirdo hippie guy in Laser Blast though. The one you said a bunch of weird rhymes.
He's been in a lot of things. Yeah.
Then you had like the stop motion aliens, which were pretty neat. Like they were done by that stop motion guy's name,
Harryhausen.
Dave no, Allen. Not here. No.
Not for Harry Osborn, I think. About
Dave Allen was the one.
David Allen. He did a lot of stop motion for Full Moon. Like, the stop motion effects are good.
Yeah, they were really good.
The thing is a lot of Full Moon movies have, like, these interesting ideas.
But they go for camp and other stupidity, so yeah.
Like, the movie wasn't going for total seriousness, I would say.
I do like Charles Band in general, because he's just very friendly at conventions, and he's like, if you stop buying these movies if you don't want more stupidity.
I mean...
you're not gonna...
Lord knows they mastered the art of box art, because, I mean...
Well, and they had reasonable production values, and they were family-owned, so... Because you see some Roger Corman movies where you're like, yeah, someone definitely didn't make any money, or probably worth the peanuts.
I mean... Parts of Laser Blast aren't, like, poorly shot. There are certain shots that look decent for what it is.
Yeah, it's just a goofy.
And the explosion effects are pretty decent as well. Like, when stuff explodes, it's like, it feels like oh shit, this could have really hurt somebody.
Yep.
Next it's just the overall concept is just like, oh my god.
It's out there. Just turn your brain off. So we got The Brain That Wouldn't Die. So why did you guys pick this
first full episode?
So the nostalgia of this first episode, and do you just love the riffs or the host segments the most on this one, would you say?
Oh.
No, I mean, for Mike's first, that's a very dark movie.
It's got a very misogynistic
what's going on.
Severed head on a plate with the mouse remains alive.
Surprisingly,
that's my wife's favorite.
It's more like the head die, but I guess Brain and Wind Die sounds better.
Yeah, it's got some funny riffs. I don't like the movie particularly. I think it's just kind of a little nasty for my taste.
Yeah. Kind of a video nasty before there was a video nasty.
I did find some humor in him trying to find a body.
Oh yeah, she can't have a cardboard body. It's real bad.
It's just like, now, honey, I might pick something that may not be to your liking.
And everybody, he's just leering at every woman he comes across, and and then there's that woman who's so disfigured because of that tiny scar she's got on the side.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, how could you go out in the daylight? And the thing he had behind his door, the creep that his preview experiment, like, what led to that?
Yeah, there's people who
experiments
appear and exit, and you're like, how many experiments does he have?
It's like the makeup person was just told, make a deformed face, do whatever you want with it.
Right. Any reason for their being there, we'll just delete it later.
At least it's
just make something weird looking. Okay.
Just slap Play-Doh on his face and just mush it around.
Who cares if the nose is on top of his head? It's weird. It's freaky. It'll freak people out.
Right.
Now, was her name actually Jan? Because it started Jan in the Pan.
Jan in the Pan. That was a wild segment.
But her name was Jan in the movie.
Because you could kind of tell which movies were just being re-aired so much. You're like, we gotta have this be a recurring character.
And I did like the beginning of the movie when he's like having surgery on this person's brain. And it's like, they don't have to go through bone or anything to get to it.
Bone be damned. Yeah.
And then like somebody's like saying, hey doctor, and they're like,
doctor?
They come through the door. I don't remember what it was, but they come from a weird place offset. It's like they walk out of the set.
Staging, we'll figure it out later.
Virginia Leith, who did that movie, actually died quite recently. And
did she
not like being asked about that? She would get very angry if you brought up Brain That Wouldn't
Die. She's like, I'm an actress who did a B picture. I buzz off.
And then there was that weird part at the beginning of the movie where it seems like his dad is kind of perving on them a little bit.
Yeah, like there's always the moment. It wouldn't be fun to watch you
kiss anymore when you get married. And then she says something about test tube babies and shit. What the hell was that?
A creepy god jury and executioner kind of, playing god kind of scientist. And half the time, like you say, you're like, I don't know what to feel, but it's creeping me out, and not in a way where I thought the script was well done. Just bad.
Yeah, just terrible.
And then they made fun of, when he grabbed the head and he's running and they're making football jokes.
Yeah, Nobel Prize or the Heisman Trophy.
What? boy, her makeup sure stayed on well for losing her head and then being put in a cloth.
How did she get telepathic powers too? That just came out of nowhere. Remember,
she's able to kill people with her mind.
The chemicals that were keeping her alive somehow messed with her brain chemistry. It's science. You would understand.
That's like the Flash with the lightning and chemicals. Stuff. Okay.
She had like a psychic link to the deformed creature behind the door.
Yeah.
Or she could just talk psychically. You could like the movie better if it went to be like Hammer Horror or Universal, but. It feels like made on the cheap.
As I recall, she kept saying she wanted to die, but of course the guy wasn't letting her die.
Yeah, it's almost like the earlier Joel episode with the crawling hand, you know? you're like, so who do I root for since everyone's basically awful? The creature, the humans.
Oh, giant spider invasions like that.
Yeah.
Everyone's... Yeah. Almost every character in that movie is awful in some way.
Right. To where you're just like, and because the movie's shot in a voyeuristic way, you're like, so are we the audience perverts for looking in on this crazy insanity?
That's right, audience. You're the perverts, not me, the director.
You're right. Freaking director. So we had Danger Death Ray on here.
It's good. One of the most boring movies.
Boring spy movie.
That one blocked my memory. I actually
enjoyed that movie. That's one of my favorites. I like the spy movies, though. You got the guy who played Tarzan in the 50s and 60s.
Spy and sorcery movies I do find underrated, and people get distracted more by the monsters and biker films.
At least that one gives a good role to Cambot when he starts weeping when they're shooting out the camera.
Yeah.
It's one of the rare instances where he gets to actually.
That was pretty great.
Oh, yeah. It almost makes you wonder if it's like some of those Italian James Bond knockoffs, if this plot ever got, you know, ripped off for.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the U.S. We are in the U.K. We are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan. We're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Other TV movies. Probably.
My favorite part of Danger Death Ray was when they totally destroyed Crow. I thought that the warping of Crow to be shot by a laser blast was beautiful. And that he still moves after the cartoon demolition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they did not expect the fire to be that big, but Trace just stayed in character and kept going. So
you can't redo it on that low budget.
Right. Yeah. Huh.
Acting. One take.
Oh, man.
Like, these foreign movies made by foreign directors who like think certain names sound cool, like, well, Bart Fargo. Like, I guess somehow to an Italian person that sounds like a cool name.
That's American to them. Quintessent American name.
Or help. Zap Rousedower. That was a
movie. Yeah, that Rousedower, was, yeah.
Maybe Canadians think that's cool.
The director was Dutch.
It might be, yeah. It might even be a Troll 2 case where, you know, they needed a interpreter on set and they still, with those interpreters, weren't figuring out what they needed to say.
As the director said, just say it the way we wrote it.
Right. Even though the way we wrote it.
The way I wrote it.
Yeah. You can't piss on hospitality. I won't allow it.
So. I walk this movie if you change a word, even though we got to change a word.
Well, it's also got that weird watch in the swim pool shot that they use for the stinger in that movie.
Is
that
something like that?
Where it's edited really weird. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A hand is, he throws it out the window and then you see a hand putting it in.
Hold on.
That shit was great.
Continuity. Oh, man. So what are our thoughts on Zombie Nightmare, especially how star Adam West appeared at one of the Turkey Day specials?
Yeah.
Oh, had Thor. That was good about making fun of himself. Yeah.
Tia Carrere finally got, like, I think when they were releasing the DVDs, someone asked her to sign it, and she's like, I had no idea anyone knew about that movie.
Yeah, you'd imagine.
Oh, shit.
Imagine. God.
The guy who runs over John Michael Thor is director Sean Levy.
Yes.
Yep.
Doing Deadpool 3. Yeah.
Much like how Dean Devlin, who's known for his Roland Emmerich infamous disaster movies, appears in City Limits. It's fun seeing future actor turned filmmakers, you know, in lesser work and working with their friends at the time.
Slumming.
Yeah. And they haven't even started and they're slumming.
Right. They're just in the slum.
I'm just here.
Like the one detective guy who sounded like this,
yeah,
like there.
Was he a coroner? I think he was the coroner.
Yeah. Coroner.
Yeah.
You are looking for one large individual.
Like absolutely.
Tiny voice.
And seeing Frank Deitz, who's one of the stars, sharing his stories about it. I think I got a document of it, and he went on to have a big photography and art direction career. And he's like, he could see why Adam West was a trooper, because the director was basically high all the time, just, you know, he's a metal singer, so he has no idea on how to make a movie, and they're basically, and
he just wants to do horror, that's what he knows.
Yeah. And the guy playing one of the zombie creatures coming back from the dead, Pee-wee Piemont, later became a award-winning stunt coordinator on blockbusters like The Departed and Southland. And they were mad at him because they had to fire him because he was eating virtually everyone's food. Like, the catering was worse on that than Battle of Earth. They're like, guys, there's not much food here. We gotta eat.
I like that the host segments in Zombie Nightmare gave us a choice on whether voodoo can be used for evil or good.
Yeah.
In the first segment,
the filmmakers don't know, so they're just bemusing it.
You could give Jimmy Carter a hug. Or in the last segment, when Frank turns Forrester into a zombie, that was again legit scary and gave me that body snatcher feeling.
Years before Frank goes to Second Banana Heaven, you're like, what does Frank become?
You have to add several to the list of Batmans too from that episode.
Yeah.
That's true.
And Mike was Robin, yeah.
Lady that was in the voodoo lady. Oh my, Molly McKimbe.
Yeah,
she was insane.
Completely unintelligible, and I love it.
Yeah,
lime in the coconut.
You needed subtitle. Like Miss Cleo was more intelligible.
Was more intelligible. Yeah,
intelligible. Yeah,
it works. It tracks.
It's just like, what are you saying throughout most of this? And the guy's mother was apparently wearing Mrs. Voorhees sweater.
Yeah, it's like they needed merchandise in there, and it does make you wonder, is like, does someone wish they were?
And the stereotypical Italian shopkeeper didn't have a stereotypical Italian name.
Hank Peters, yeah. Mm-hmm. Hank Peters.
It's like Hank Peters.
Italian grocer.
Like, you sound like you came out of a Super Mario cartoon.
Totally.
Nice. This is another one where Rift tracks.
Yeah.
He did it.
Did they do?
There is stuff cut out of the version.
like Hank Peters.
Right.
I mean, I didn't know Rift Tracks treated it, but I'm not surprised because there's so much violence. I mean, in the episode, it's pretty nasty. So.
Oh yeah, there was nudity too.
Yeah,
like, was there? That out.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think they're like brief. Yeah, like some brief nudity.
Was it Zombie Nightmare? They did Zombie Nightmare, but had John Micklethor. He was also a Rift Tracks they did for. Was it Rock and Roll Nightmare?
Yeah,
Rock and Roll Nightmare. Oh,
man. Oh, wow. I think the opening credits have it as Gates of Hell or something like that, but yeah. Because, like, it's got different titles, but yeah, they also did that one, which John Micklethor, he also wrote the script for.
Yeah.
Hmm. I think a lot of people just like the Motorhead intro, and that's it.
which, I guess because they knew Motorhead, because, like, this song doesn't match at all what's going on. It's like, because John Micklethor probably knew Motorhead, they were able to get permission to use the song.
Yeah.
Did Trace and Frank riff Brain That Wouldn't Die this year too?
I did recently.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So that's kind of cool.
And in fact, this week they did Teenagers from Outer Space.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I love looking at the information of that movie too. How like that was it was a vanity project for like the director and the star were lovers. So like he wanted to make a movie for him. Which you know what? That's actually a sweet sounding story in that regard. he wanted to make a movie for his boyfriend. That's sweet, I think. Now the execution wasn't great.
No.
But
Zombie Nightmare?
It was at least still entertaining. It was still entertaining.
Teenagers from Outer Space, the director Tom Graff and David Love, who played Derek, were actually lovers.
Yeah. They were lovers, yeah. Like they were secret, and like he made the movie for him as a star vehicle.
Yep.
Which is one of the one he thought he was Jesus and put an ad in the paper about it or something?
Yeah, I think the director.
He's Jesus of metal.
yeah, like years later, he had a mental breakdown.
Wow.
Yeah. The director from Teenagers or the star?
I think the director.
The director, okay.
Oh, no, that guy. Okay.
Had like a mental breakdown and claimed he was Jesus.
Yeah. Well, he's in the movie too. I think he's a reporter in the movie or something.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. Possibly, yeah. I think,
we know too much.
yeah. We're also getting out of the top 10, so I apologize. But...
Oh, good. So let's go on to Escape Bronx Warriors 2, but known here on TV on MST as Escape 2000.
yeah.
You must leave the Bronx.
Was this the one that was a sequel?
It's
got the same like it's got the same lead actor, but I'm pretty sure he's also called Trash in both movies, but it's
the same movie. They were trying to do a mixture of Walter Hill's The Warriors meets Escape from New York.
But like
Mad Max.
The sequel has some of the same people in it, though I think some of them are playing characters now.
I don't mind it on cut. Those looking for character development, it's a fun, stupid beat 'em up, but at the same time, yeah, they had to cut it for violence, and so it's just so wild how, yeah.
Another one.
Toblerone, the character Mike plays in the end credits, you know, he's like, hey, I survived. He's like, well, not in the uncut version.
Ryan, I think they did both those Bronx movies.
Yep.
Riff Tracks did.
The first one had a sweet scene of this guy totally eating it on his bike, like just embarrassed face on the pavement just eating it.
Yeah, there's that. For real. Fred Williamson's like, in the part one, and
Nick Morrow's
there's a montage of them beating a bunch of people up to where you're like, did Robert Rodriguez and Tarantino watch this on repeat? Because it's totally the same.
I bet they did.
Just stylish exchange.
Vic Morrow's in the first one too.
Yeah, yes he is. And
he's like his character's called
He's raping half the guys basically to show his dominance, so he's an alpha male or some shit. But
right,
his character's called Hammer, and Fred Williamson's called the Ogre.
The Ogre, yeah. Hmm. And part two is kind of more like Return of the Jedi. They're setting up charges and blowing up bunkers, and they're just telling basically making fun of how big is this Bronx. But well, what gets me every time is when you see the elderly gentleman who looks like a CIA kind of guy, and they're like, Wilfred Brimley is Special Agent 007.
Aren't those both supposed to be post-apocalyptic, but you can clearly see traffic in New York City in the background? Or am I wrong on that?
I mean, we can probably assume that.
I mean, like, you, anything you think that might be bad about a movie, it might be true.
It looks it's like post-apocalyptic with RoboCop elements, and that like a big corporation seems to own a lot of what's happening in this world.
Yeah, they own the police and the kill, who are basically Gestapo kill squads. So they're bringing
and the
people.
Bronx is like some kind of, it's essentially a war zone. Like basically everyone just lives there.
And Crow just like, keeps piping up saying, "I agree with Henry Silva."
And then like the main guy Trash is this blank staring meathead.
Basically, yeah. Just an NPC.
And they apparently, if you look at the trivia, there was a rumor going around that he had died because no one's been ever able to find him.
I read he committed suicide or something.
Oof. I thought that was a rumor, but who knows?
I don't know. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's a rumor.
And he has this kind of a weird setup where you just see him in his room. He's got all these posters and then he's like a futuristic bike or something like that. Yeah. I like it better than a lot of the other movies.
The actor was discovered at a shoe shop or something.
That's sad. I miss you.
Some casting guy saw him at a shoe shop, and I guess he was also like, because he was near a gym or something. And
if I had to put together an Expendables team of badasses in MST3K Trash movies, I'm gonna have Trash be the guy who pilots everybody.
Toblerone.
Toblerone.
And I've seen him in other stuff too, but I couldn't tell you what offhand.
Oh man.
Yeah, his side character, you look at him and he's been in a bunch of Italian movies, but
oh yeah, those, especially the Italian exploitation, you'll see so many of the same people.
It's even it blurs the line when you're like, wow, they were actually in a legit good movie like a Dario Argento giallo or just some popular, or they're an American person, you know, taking a break from, you know, a popular TV show because that's all they saw at the drive-ins or art house theaters.
I love it when the credits are like almost all Italian names, but then the director, directed by Vincent Don, directed by Humphrey Humbert.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a totally American name, you guys.
Just, it was guerrilla film style, basically. Yeah. So then our second to last one, third technically, is Deathstalker and the Warriors from Hell. This is the third one.
Sword.
We know how to count. We promise.
Do we? I don't know. I mean, we had a tie in the last one.
I mean, you know.
No relation to any of the other Deathstalker movies.
Right, exactly. Aren't they all separate from each other, basically?
Yeah, I legit love Ator, and when you look at Deathstalker, you're just like, what was going on in anyone's mind?
The character of Deathstalker changed for each movie. The first movie, he's like an amoral asshole. Second movie, he's a goofball.
Yeah.
He's kind of amoral too, though.
Well, yeah, but like, he's goofier. He's like,
at least he eventually leads a rebellion, and that guy went on to become a hit TV director, you know, John Trulesky.
The actor playing him in the second movie seemed to know, like, this movie's bad, but I'm going to have fun with it.
So. Yeah, he and Wynorski would rewrite the dialogue, and that was so cool seeing that as part of the MST3K live final farewell tour.
Oh,
because
I'll have my revenge, and Deathstalker 2, like, oh, fuck you.
Right, and that, then they had that. To edit it, you could tell, and part 3, basically, you can tell they just edited out just all the boring scenes because there's just very slow transitions and more of the villain laughing, and you're like, okay, let's get on with this. Let's get to the horses ambushing and the utter goofy looking wizards. And it's just so funny how the romantic lead just seems to be guffawing while she's kissing the hero halfway. And it's an even bigger shame because the lead, you know, is just very, is like, he's, people have, you guys have all noted this, his accent changes, and he went on to have a big TV career. He was one of the villains on the fifth season of 24. And you're like, man, these TV actors, baby, you know, just they can be good or bad depending on the production.
It seems. I mean, some like actors,
And it is funny seeing them critique the fight scene because Hawk himself from Buck Rogers is the villain here. And he's just going to town, chewing the scenery, and it's like they didn't know how to orchestrate the fight scene and they just did it in one take. There's like, let's hit each other with plastic swords, but let's not hit each other because then it's apparent it's plastic.
I was surprised to see who was bald, you know, because I remember him in Buck Rogers with feathers on his head.
Yeah. And you look at his resume and it's all kinds of classy New York theater and then guest appearances on all the Law and Orders and then soap operas. You're like, he's not shabby in terms of career, but man,
you'll give me how much? Okay.
And that's why it was funny seeing him in Wizards of the Lost Kingdom 1 and 2 on the recent Jonah era.
Because that, like, Lord.
He did those basically back to back, just in Brazil. By with Roger Corman's company, and
neither movie have anything to do with each other.
No, and Carradine slumming it with his girlfriend.
Talking about people who are on screen and chewing scenery, we forgot in Outlaw to talk about Jack Palance.
Yeah,
well, we kind of branched over it.
He chewed all the scenery.
Needed more Palance. This totally needed more Palance.
That's true of a lot of movies he was in that era.
Yeah. he's a loud and bombastic actor for sure.
Oh, totally.
He's the best part of Shane.
He is definitely the best part of Shane, yeah. But
the Shape of Things to Come, he's easily the best part of that
movie. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That reason. As Omus. Yeah.
The robots.
The woman in that, Terry Treese, I think is the actress's name. She played in Alien Nation, the TV series.
Oh, really? Yeah. So she was already in B Movie City.
As a love interest to Officer Sykes, or whatever his name is.
Hey, okay.
They start developing, and they get to the TV movies in later years, and they actually get together.
Nice.
Yeah, her IMDb photo is her character from Alien Nation.
There you go. I'm sure she got plenty of fan mail from either.
And she was also in, I hope I'm not wrong about this, but she was also in like House 3.
I think so, with Lance Henriksen.
It's one of those ones that went directly to videotape.
I think it had a limited screen, but yeah, it was a USA Up All Night type movie. And it's more like Shocker in the First Power than it is anything to do with House 1 and 2.
Yeah, they weren't really connected too much.
Yeah, it's basically an evil TV played by Ryan James from Blade Runner. And does Ryan James ever appear in any MST3K movie? I know he has a few Riff Trax appearances.
Good question.
He's in that one crazy one where he's like a zombie with Bo Hopkins and Wings Hauser using.
He's like an albino scientist.
Yeah,
Nightmare at Noon. Yeah,
but George Candy. George Candy also slumming it, which
typical George.
He did
all the airports, like, so we'll give him credit for cranking through all those.
But yeah,
he had Cool Hand Luke, and then there was everything else. So we had, as our final entry, we could not decide. We had, all of them were good picks. We had a tie between Alien from LA and San Francisco International. So why do these movies all ring true to you guys? You know, Kathy Ireland's squeaky voice or Clute Gallagher's handsome nature?
I liked all the character actors that were in San Francisco International.
Yeah.
Those segments bring back every great character that they had as guest characters on Mystery Science Theater in response to Mike Zirkle impression.
Yeah. At this point, yeah, it is cool seeing.
And Beefcake, Frank, and Trace.
Right.
That's true.
Them inviting basically all this roster of characters to the Thanksgiving dinner where Pearl basically poisoned everybody.
Yeah. What? Night of the Blood Beast.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite riffs from SF International is, looks like he got that plane out of a cereal box, and it looks like it came out of a cereal box.
Yeah, it looks like an old model.
It was a perfect call.
Oh man. All these TV curiosities were these pilots that don't get picked up but still get circulated on antenna channels because they need someone to fill the time slot.
I noticed from the font on SF International, it looked like the NBC Mystery Movie. I wonder if they were considering it for that.
It might have been. That would make better sense.
Yeah.
I think it was a pilot.
Yeah.
Right. And
That was also really the time that they were doing a lot of those airplane disaster movies too, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Superdome was a fun one on KTMA.
So it's sort of like
that's probably my favorite, sort of like
when they made Tornado in response to Twister.
Oh, right. Lord.
And Bruce then King. Higher.
Or a movie just had a Twister in it for no reason.
Yeah.
Right. I remember there's that movie Natalie Portman did where she gives birth in a Walmart, and there's a scene in the movie later on that has a Twister in it. So,
yeah. It came
out around the same time as that movie. Like, there's no reason for us to be here other than the fact that Twister came out and it did well.
Right. We need a random movie playing in the background. So
there was also a movie called Night of the Twisters that starred Devon Sawa from like the 90s. It was a TV movie. It was apparently based on some true events. And I think Brad Dourif's in it as a meteorologist.
There was that. There was another like Twister in the Sky, which had Bruce Campbell, and he gets killed at the very beginning or something.
That's. I thought he only did Tornado for that.
That's what I'm thinking. Tornado, yeah.
Well, SF International also has the TV movie Hippie with the Guitar guy. Yes. You remember that?
That was just out, man.
Also, there's that moment with like the people wearing orange in the airport. They're either followers of the Maharishi Veda or maybe a cult.
Yeah, it's like, why did we pick this airport?
It seems like really important that they archived that moment in history.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if they interrupted their filming at that airport or something. Because, like you say, it doesn't have anything to do with the plot. It's just scenery.
Like, okay, let's just film them in there. Whatever. Let's
just keep rolling.
You see airplane movies or airport movies, and you see that stuff where they get the religious fanatics. You know, Zen like
Krishna and such.
Very Christian.
Well, airplane makes one of that.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
that's great. Clue Gallagher
with Robert Stack beating up a few of them.
Mm-hmm. Good old Robert
Clue Gallagher being the loudest guy on the plane, but that's his cover to get the bad guy. Remember? Just like, hey, everybody, look at me! Okay, you're under arrest.
Totally.
It was.
Oh man.
Damn.
Very seventies,
and. Alien from LA. I mean, I've enjoyed some of Albert Pion's trash, like Cyborg and Nemesis, and some of his other movies with.
I was really getting into her voice. I really liked it.
Really? I mean, it's a cool character.
My brother actually dated a girl who was gorgeous, who literally had a voice like that.
Is Kathy Ireland's voice that high pitched in real life?
I don't think it is. I think she was
directed to do it.
Okay.
And Pion, it's just so weird how. He just doesn't seem to be directing anybody in this.
I just love, like, they give her the biggest glasses ever. Like, oh, she's unattractive.
Yeah.
she's all bad in Australian Atlantis. Oh,
really?
You know what? Huh? The concept of Atlantis being some underground city, like, instead of underwater, I like that idea.
And he basically... So
it's underground in California.
Well, like, she's going to Africa. Cool concept for a movie. She goes to Africa. She had her dad was looking for it in Africa. She goes... She's the reason why it's alien from LA is because she's the alien from LA, but she travels to Africa where her dad disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an underground bridge to Australia.
I actually rewatched that episode. There's a guy in the movie with an Australian accent who she calls Gus. I rewatched it recently on the MST on the Gizmoplex app.
Oh wow. Nice.
It's one of my favorites because of just how ridiculous it is, and just again the weird like ways like I'm just thinking like you know, it's like you'd almost forget Kathy Ireland is a beautiful woman when her voice is just wow. I'll say this: sometimes they make the joke about her giving Doll a surprise, but there are some moments in the movie where she gives reactions that are like comically over the top that I think are funny.
Yeah,
when they're meant to be funny.
How many Central actually ran that unriffed?
Huh. I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I think like a year or so. I think it's about the time Mystery Science Theater was going off the air.
I'm sure it was a USA Up All Night movie. Yeah. Joe Bob Briggs reviewed it.
But like I remember,
it's not really a comedy, but anyway.
Her at the beginning of the movie, her douchey ex-boyfriend was a douchey blonde guy in that Robot Wars movie. Like I'm watching, I'm like, that guy looks familiar. I'm like, oh my god, it's that guy. Like I've watched too many of these movies. So
that's one of the new ones they've done on Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah, Robot recently.
Yeah. And Tom Matthews from one of the Friday the 13th films.
He looked like a poor man's Kiefer Sutherland.
Oh dear.
kind of like he's definitely giving off that 80s douche vibe, like that, you, because like every 80s movie usually had a blonde douche guy,
yeah, and
like
a James Spader or
something. James Spader, Billy Zabka, yeah, or like Kiefer Sutherland. Those are like someone, your big three,
the bad boy, yeah.
Those are your big three douches of the 80s.
You're forgetting Judd Nelson, how dare you.
Well, blonde. Judd Nelson wasn't blonde. Oh. We're going by him.
Oh man. So
Alien from LA also has the invention exchange bit with the Vendigut.
Oh yeah,
it's mm-hmm. one of their sickest jokes. But I always loved the idea of inserting millions of dollars in quarters for a liver.
Do you have $125,000 in quarters, Frank? As a matter of fact, I do.
Well, you get to see Frank's liver on the floor, and they echo it later with Crow vomiting up metal parts. So it was a nice companion piece to that.
Oh, totally.
You could tell the writers were, hey, let's run with this.
Yep. And Deep Roy, he was best known for his various sci-fi movie and TV appearances, was in there in heavy makeup.
His crazy eyelash.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in, like, he played a chimp in a Golan Globus movie, Going Bananas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With Dom DeLuise and Jimmy JJ Walker and the kid from Over the Top, David Mendenthal.
Yeah, I think so.
And like
yeah.
the monkey could talk.
Mm-hmm.
Bonzo, I think his name was, but I'm pretty sure he was voiced over by like Frank Welker, because I would imagine it's Frank Welker, because Frank Welker does all the animal voices.
Yeah, especially if it's a wild ape.
Yeah, and like I've seen clips of this movie like from a review. I've never seen the whole movie, but like it's nuts. Especially when the monkey talks, like Bonzo loves Ben. It's like, no, stop that.
Stop.
Horrifying. Apparently, for that movie, Manahan Golan wanted the Clyde the orangutan from Every Which Way But Loose to be in it, and apparently even had a meeting set up to talk to him, to talk to the orangutan. Oh, how I would love to have seen that meeting.
Yeah,
I can only imagine.
Manahan Golan sounded like just the most insane person.
Well, it certainly is.
Like the apple.
Oh my god.
The apple is terrible.
Have they done that at Rift Tracks yet?
Yes.
Rift Tracks has done that, yes. It's amazing. It's one of their early ones, because it's before they had the opening intro song.
I missed that. What movie was this we're talking about?
The apple.
Oh, the app, the musical thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Rift Tracks did that years ago. Yeah, that was one they did before they had the opening like animation intro by Jonathan Colton. Yeah. But like, yeah, it's got Joss Ackland's in it,
mm-hmm.
the bad guy from Red Dawn, the landlady is played by this one British actress in just tons of things.
Yeah, I've seen her in Blackadder.
She was in the Harry Potter movies as like a teacher. She was apparently the first person on TV, British TV, to say fuck.
Miriam Margolyes, yeah, she's known for being.
I want that on someone's tombstone. First person to say fuck.
I didn't realize in the Apple
TV she was the first person to say and like in the Apple she's like this Jewish landlady, like she even says Meshuggah, I'm pretty sure, at one point.
She's pretty over the top.
Well, everything's over the top in that movie. There's nothing subtle.
It's a biblical allegory.
I didn't realize that was
supposedly Catherine. They said Adam and the Apple and stuff.
I think she was also in James and the Giant Peach.
Also, what's her name? Finola Hughes, actress Finola Hughes. She was in the app. It's a very brief blink and you'll miss it scene of her, but she appears in the movie for the speed song.
Wow. That weird ass drug song.
Yeah. Speed. Was that now? Need more speed? Oh, why did you say so? That's like one of the riffs. Like, well, I got some to me. It's.
Oh man.
But like, if
I didn't recognize Catherine Mary Stewart until I saw the end credits. I went through that whole movie, and then that was her. She looks totally different from her other movies, like Night of the Comet or whatever.
Her singing voice was dubbed. Apparently, she had recorded her own singing, but like Manahan Golan didn't think it was good enough or something.
I mean, I would do a double feature with Rocky Horror, but heavy-handed and all.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah.
Similar.
So we had some honorable mentions. We had Teenage Strangler, and we had the Coleman Francis trilogy. Who wants to name off the Coleman trilogy of
Red Zone.
Beast of Yucca Flats.
Beast of Yucca Flats.
Oh, no, it goes Skydivers.
The Skydivers, Beast of Yucca Flats.
And I don't think I've seen all the... I don't think I've seen all the Coleman Francis movies yet. So.
Oof.
Oh, you've missed so much, believe me.
Now those are bleak.
Red Zone Cuba is the Nitrate of Mondo Fine.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. John Carradine.
John Carradine. The voice for Mondo Fine.
I'm Cherokee Jack.
I love Riff Track's joke about John Carradine. John Carradine walked on the scene and bad movies just form around him.
He and Ken Mitchell invented the whole just be a wise man who curses people out or be a angry police chief who sits at a desk. And before Bruce Willis was doing that.
I remember Riff Track when they did Jacko. It's like special appearance by John Carradine. Like, can you call it a special appearance for the 700 movies he's done? And it's like, same for Cameron Mitchell.
Exactly.
Like, can you really call it a special appearance after they've done like a, which at this point, both actors had died by that point when Jacko came out. John Carradine definitely had died at that point.
Yeah, so, oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Because, so, like, he died 88 or 89, and this movie came out 94. So, like, they used stock footage from some other movie he had done.
So they Bela Lugosi'd him.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Essentially, he was the next Bela Lugosi. Yeah. But so... why do we love Teenage Stranger so much?
Well, because Mikey is so goofy.
Yeah, Mikey!
It's got a kind of endearing feel to it because, you know, you can tell everybody who was involved really cared. I mean, yeah, Mikey is goofy, but it's because he was really trying so hard to give such a meaning.
He was apparently impersonating the female actress, the lead female.
Yeah, he took his cues from her, but she was the only one who actually had ever really acted before. But yeah, I don't know. I find it very endearing because it just has this whole community theater. And we're going to show off Huntington, West Virginia. And I don't know. I just
I was very like that when I found out that that's what was being made. When I found out the movie was made there, that was shocking when I first watched the episode.
Wild.
Because that's, you know, and the opening shot is of the old Huntington High School. It's no longer the high school.
Were you around yet when that was made? Were you born?
Who, me? Oh no, I'm 35. Yeah. I was born in 1987. I was like,
Like
2 years old when MST was like on Comedy Central. I didn't really start getting into the show until years after it had ended.
I remember black and white TV. I'm old.
I mean,
I remember three channels.
I'm old.
I remember limited channels. It's not that limited.
Yeah.
Okay. I actually got a coworker needs me to call them, so I gotta end this too. So.
Okay, well, we love to have you on here.
Oh wait, no, wait. Okay, I think it's maybe I don't need to leave. Yeah, it's just someone was wanting me to.
The Mads are calling.
No, it's cool.
Oh man! Any other ones that we'd like to put in here?
But yeah, Teenage Strangler. Yeah, like even taking out the fact that it's still in my hometown. Yeah, the movie has like a charm to it.
It's a fun movie. It really is. It rolls well, and
yeah,
you don't lose your interest.
It's barely over an hour, which. And I mean, unlike Manos, it doesn't drag like Mano. Like, because there's not so many quiet scenes of nothing.
Exactly.
Like, Manos is just because, yeah, they had almost nothing to work with.
Yeah.
And this movie, though, they had, like, there's usually dialogue or something at least going on.
I do like the legit cheesy sequels to Manos, because people just love the idea. They just love all those.
I mean... The thing is, the story of Manos could probably make a legit creepy horror
film. It's just
like,
a funny movie.
Like, I think there are moments in the movie of like Torgo and where Torgo is off-putting, in which part of that is because the actor was high at the time, but like there is this unsettlingness to the atmosphere. It just drags too much.
They knew what they wanted, they just shouldn't have dubbed it over with elevator music.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, this was filmed by people who didn't know how to make a movie. It was filmed with a camera that couldn't record sound.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, I will still give it kudos for the fact that this was 1966, and this was a guy making a movie. Making an independent movie back then was almost non-existence.
Totally.
And hey, I mean, in that regard, he won his bet with Sterling Silliphant because the bet wasn't to make a good movie.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because that's how it all started. He was like, he had met Sterling Silliphant because he was location scouting for something. Yeah. And he said, oh, making a movie's not that hard. I could do that.
Problem is, goofy movies are still entertaining. So
yeah.
Why does it like, make anything with quality anymore?
Like, I mean, the Manos is definitely like, I probably couldn't watch it without riff it, without commentary because of just the dragging.
I watched it. It's fun.
I do love the Drift Tracks version because it has a bit more like adult jokes in there.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, like Torgo just being a pervert because you totally could tell he was perving on that chick.
Oh, Trace and Frank did a year ago, too.
Oh, yeah.
I got a copy of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Trace pointed out that for what he had to work with, it flows fairly well.
He knows it like the back of his head.
Yeah, like 80-second takes or something like that, and that's hard to do.
Yeah, how many couldn't film more than 30 seconds at a time?
30. Yeah. Wow, that's hard to do. It really is.
About six wives, master. Why can't I have one for myself? Up the sex with my hat hasn't been great.
It's an interesting example of outsider art, I think, in the sense that it's just so beyond the mainstream that it becomes, at least for me, sort of mysteriously fascinating.
And maybe it is like, and again, it's admirable that this guy was able to do it, because back these days it's easy to make, like, for someone to make
there's
so many, like, okay, making a movie it's still difficult, but like there's way easier ways to make a movie. The technology and the money for it has decreased significantly.
Totally.
But like, this guy had to make, you know, again, with a camera that could only record for like 30 seconds at a time, no sound, you know, had to like, and had to redub everything and couldn't get everyone back to dub it. So he dubbed it. So he used only like 3 people to dub it.
Totally.
Thus the little girl sounding like an old lady trying to sound like a little girl.
Which upset her. Yeah. When she saw in the movie, she didn't realize it did that.
I do believe, according to IMDb, Jackie Neiman Jones, who played Debbie, appeared in the Curse of Bigfoot movie.
Yes, yeah, she did.
In the classroom.
Yeah. And she and her dad, her dad guffawed when he saw his movie on MST pre-K.
I can only imagine. Like, that must have been, I mean, just to be like watching the show one night, your experience for the night is Manos, the Hands of Fate. And he's like, and he's just thinking like, this can't, because this is before like you had something to tell you in advance what the episode was going to be, so you had to be thinking like, that can't be what I think it is. Like, how did Frank Conniff unearth this, because he's the one that came across it.
Exactly.
And it's like, it's under, they said under normal circumstances would not be a movie they would put on the show because of just how nothing happens, but like, it was just too bizarre not to show. And I totally get that.
It's almost like the movie The Ring, where that video just appears out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, somehow this guy got a copy of this movie. Well, hell, yeah. Like, that guy who bought a print of Miami Connection on eBay. And YK Kim thought they were playing a cruel joke on him when they were like, calling him to ask him about the movie.
Exactly.
And that's a movie, like, that's one, to me, is a perfect, one of the perfect bad movies, because, like, again, it's always, like, so, there's pretty much always something happening on screen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, no, there's very little dull moment happening.
Totally.
And again, based on behind the scenes stuff, everyone seemed to have a fun time making it, particularly the fact that a lot of them were students of YK Kim, the local government gave permission for him to film without permits. I mean, this guy clearly was respected in the community.
Yep.
So that's again, like, when you hear stuff like that, you're like, you know what, that's sweet and admirable that this got made because of those factors. And yeah, so Manos is something that's like, yeah, I give all the respect for Manos getting the guy being able to make the movie and get it, have a premiere for it. It may not turn out, apparently he wore the master's cloak years after for Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad to hear he didn't have a miserable experience from making it. I'm glad to hear he took it with stride and like was still proud of what he did. And I can see why he should. I think he should be proud.
1,000%.
It's a shame. It really is a shame about the actor who played Torgo having depression, like killing himself before the movie premiere.
Yeah.
Like, because really, as he's playing the role, like, you know, the character's meant to be creepy and unsettling, and Torgo is creepy and unsettling.
No, he did. He did a great job with that part. He's one of a kind.
And the Tom Neiman is the master. Like his just staring off had like a good intense stare to him. It's like it was just again he just lingered too long.
Exactly.
To the point where it's like, okay, you've lost the point. At this point, it's not creepy anymore. It's just awkward. And the actor is looking off camera like, are we done?
Right.
Like the woman goes, why don't you guys leave us alone? And then she's look, you can tell she's looking off camera like, is that it?
Yeah. Like...
Stuff like that is just great, where like you can tell the actors are just like not sure what they're supposed to do.
Well, most of that movie says, should we stay here or should we leave? You know, it goes back and forth for almost the whole film, you know.
10 miles, might as well be 10,000 miles. 10 miles significantly is not that bad of a walk.
Yeah.
And the deserts, I don't think the deserts used too much in horror films, which is also a shame because that's a good horror location.
Yeah.
That's because you know, you're mostly away from civilization.
Yeah, you hadn't seen that location before.
Do we know anything about the location of that house or whatever they were in?
I think it's at this point it's gone. I think it might have been torn down years ago.
I mean, I read Jackie's book recently and got to interview her.
Like the house itself is gone. Like it got torn down years afterwards.
There's a documentary on a couple of the DVDs that show the it. They show it later, but it's gone now. So
yeah, like. Yeah, just like, oh yeah, this place looks fine. Let's sleep here for the night.
Okay.
It's like the most ultimately clueless dad in a horror film.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's before it was a cliche.
Mm-hmm. All the recycled lines. That was what I remember most about.
And given that some of them were off camera, you're like, was that intentional or they just added in to add padding? Not dead the way you know it. He's with us always. Not dead the way you know it. He is with us always.
She's my baby. She'll understand.
She's my baby.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes that wood look like Shakespeare. Some of that dialogue.
I mean, you know what? Ed Wood's movie, the dialogue in his movies tend to keep going. It doesn't have like a lot of long pauses.
Yeah.
The dialogue might be nonsensical at times, but it's going.
It's there. Right.
You see? Your stupid minds. Stupid.
stupid.
He's dead. That much is for sure.
And someone's responsible.
Modern women. Been like that through the ages. I'll need something to hold while you're away. It's like everyone have a nasally voice.
Oh, wild. Oh, man. So this has been a joy having you all on here. If anyone would care to promote anything, let me know.
Well, there's my website, geekwithclipons.com, where I write reviews.
Nice.
I also have items that I sell on Redbubble and TeePublic, some of them which are MST related.
I couldn't tell. I'm just kidding.
Well, if you've seen it, I think I've shown it to you. Yeah, like I've got one called Torgo's House City.
Yeah.
He looks after the place while you're away.
Good old Torgo. This has been a joy all.
Oh, yeah.
Until next time, folks, stay all misty.
Right. Go along.
Bye. Have a good one.
Hasta luego.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.